Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on June 22nd, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here in The South Bay Show. Joining us today as co-host and co-producer, President and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lips, and of course with us because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
Good morning, Joe. I'm doing well.
I'm doing great. I've got this really robust green drink in front of me. I love it. It's fantastic.
Is it gritty?
It's gritty. It's separated too. So I drink the first top part first, and then the bottom part. You know.
Very nice. And you know what that is? And you know what that noise in the background is? That would be me stirring my green drink because it keeps separating.
So listen, I was at a friend of mine's grand opening last night of their orthopedic facility, which is, oh my gosh, have you been back by the Lakers, you know where the Lakers training facility is in El Segundo?
The new facility.
Not the new one.
Yeah.
The new one that's scaled to a 7-foot person. I mean, it's the most incredible thing. By the way, you guys should be signing up for my lunch there on July 6th because we're going to have a lunch there with those guys, and I can only take 50 people. So anyway, but the surrounding area has all been developed, and there's all these emerging very cool businesses. It's almost like that area of Playa, you know, where all the dot-coms, I mean, the building, the structures, they're all very unique architecture, and very contemporary. And it's just, wow, it's like this hidden, I mean, there's sushi restaurants and all kinds of stuff back there. It's just this hidden area. And anyway, I thought that was fascinating. But secondly, I am there, and there's a lot of people there that I know. Russ Lesser and Charlotte Lesser were there, and a lot of other people that I know. But Charlotte and I started talking, what do you guys think about this as a chamber event, all right? This will be teaching people to stop and smell the roses, to connect visually with your eyes. We would have, Charlotte and I were talking, we would have an event. And maybe we'd do it here at the office. Maybe we would do it over at the Jocelyn Center. But you had to check your watch and your phone and your computer, any electronic device, at the door.
Ooh.
And it's a two-hour event. We're seated at tables, and we talk, we engage with each other, and no one has – and it would be interesting to watch people start to twitch and, you know, knee-jerk. But don't you think that would be a kind of a cool thing to do? And force people
right
to
now,
literally interact and have conversation. You know, some of them might still stare at their shoes. But
you know, I'll tell you right now, you're not going to get anybody under 30.
I know.
Yeah. That would be like, you know, cutting off the lifeline, man. That's that would be.
Well,
it would certainly
kind of
be interesting.
I just think it would be an interesting thing. And that's what Charlotte and I talked about. We would make it for 25 to 55, okay? Because we don't want it to be all of a sudden 65 plus, me and a bunch of my buddies there.
Wait a minute. Then me and you and Joe won't be able to go.
That's right.
No, you can go. I just don't want to make it look like it's all senior. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because that's who
all
would
right.
show up. Because you're right. The under 30 crowd, the under 40 crowd. You know, we say that. I'm 62. We say that. We go, oh, the 30-year-olds. Are you kidding me? Think about how, you know, I'm 62. That's 22 years older than a 40-year-old. So we're talking now, we're talking under 40, not just under 30. I mean, this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is.
No,
this is becoming a majority.
There,
you know. And I just think it'd
like
be kind of fun, unique to do. And see if we couldn't make some kind. And I would supply lunch, you know, and we would have conversations about. I would get two city council people there. We'd talk about. But the thing is, I don't want to do presentations because then I've engaged you and you just are listening. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to force
right.
you
right.
to interact with the person you're sitting next to you or at your table,
right.
and maybe at other tables, but. You know, force some face to face interaction. So
I like
I,
it.
I just,
right. I'm there.
Yeah,
count
kind
me
of
in.
Fun, huh?
Count me in. Count me
be
in.
Like, and if this was Texas, it would be turning in your electronic devices and your guns
and your shotguns. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Your concealed carry handgun that you've got down there. So
they don't have to conceal down there. They carry them in racks. And
yeah, it's just
trucks.
Open case. It's open carry.
Yeah. It's open carry. Yeah.
Open carry.
Yeah.
Open carry.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, we've got a really big, important topic we're going to discuss today, but very quickly, I just wanted to mention last night I went to the first El Segundo
Art Walk. Last night, Jackie?
I went to the first El Segundo Art Walk of the season, and they have stepped up their game once again. First off, you know, if any of you have been to it, it's spread out throughout the entire city, and they've always had a shuttle. You know, if you don't want to walk from the downtown area to the industrial Smoky Hollow area, but this year they added a shuttle. Well, first off, this year they have headquarters, and the headquarters number one is in the center of town, right across the street from the Chevron station, Grand and Main, is it? And they had this huge tent, live music, food trucks, art, and every 30 minutes they had a shuttle leave from there to go on a tour of the water tank that artist John Van Hammersveld did the mural on. Grand opening was a couple of months ago, so they were doing water tank shuttles there every half hour, and you could do a 50-minute walking tour around it, which is very, very cool. As I mentioned, they had two headquarters. The one right on Grand and Main, and the other one was at South Bay Customs. And then, Joe, we had them on the show a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it's become such a big event that everybody wants to get involved in it. But because it's an art walk, you know, you're walking around. You can't have things that are too far out. And a loft hotel up on Sepulveda wanted to be involved. So what they're doing is they're having an after party. After when the art walk ends at 9 or whatever, they have an after party at the hotel with more art. And last night it was from 8 to midnight. So it's become just this big, cool thing. And there are two more this season. So if you didn't go last night, well, actually, you know, you have to go every time because every time it's different. There's different businesses. There's different artists. So anyway, just wanted to give that a plug. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
Yep.
Fantastic. This is a big topic. It's something that everyone in the South Bay, those that want to be involved, those that don't want to be involved, those that have a big problem with this topic, everyone is engaged and talking about it because it's life. This is what we are living through. And I'm very glad that Mark has been championing this topic with the city council and other organizations in Manhattan Beach, but it's something everyone deals with every day if they live here and get around and walk around. Jackie, who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are Nancy Wilcox, co-chair of the South Bay Coalition to End Homelessness, and Shari Weaver, director of the Coordinated Entry System for the South Bay. Now, Nancy has been a full-time volunteer for the past 23 years, most recently serving as co-chair of the South Bay Coalition to End Homelessness since 2013. In this capacity, she helps oversee the day-to-day operational workings of the organization. The coalition's mission is to provide education about what homelessness looks like in the South Bay and advocacy to bring more services and housing to our under-resourced region. Under her leadership, the coalition took a very active role in the past four Greater Los Angeles homeless counts, ensuring the successful enumeration of all South Bay census tracts. Nancy previously worked for TRW at its Redondo Beach Space Park location until the mid-1990s. During her engineering career, she worked in the area of software development for command and control and satellite projects. She and her family are proud to call the South Bay home for the past 38 years. Now, Shari Weaver is the South Bay's director of the Coordinated Entry System, overseeing all its populations, including families, adult individuals, and youth. Working for Harbor Interfaith Services for 17 years, she has a long and successful history of providing staff leadership and compliance on programs serving those experiencing homelessness. Due to her deep operational expertise, she currently sits on the CES Policy Working Group that crafts functional procedures for this major countywide initiative. Shari is also a board member of the LA Continuum of Care that advises HUD direct funding to Los Angeles. She is a frequent guest at various stakeholder and neighborhood council meetings, fulfilling her priority to provide straightforward information to the community to help them understand homelessness and its solutions. She has served on numerous regional homeless task forces, including one recently led by Councilman Buscaino, and was the chair of the South Bay Homeless Coalition. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this morning we'll be discussing the homeless crisis and learn what is being done to end homelessness in the South Bay. Nancy, Shari, welcome to the program. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We're thrilled to have you. We're thrilled to have you, and we're thrilled to have your expertise because, you know, this is something that affects everyone, but everyone also isn't aware of the exact nature of the problem, the extent of the problem, and of course, Nancy, you've been studying this 5 years or more. Tell us, how is and what are the extents of homelessness here in the South Bay? There is a graphic that is a part of our presentation online. Tell us about that graphic and give us a sense of that, if you can do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure which graphic you're referring to, but here in the South Bay, we know that homelessness rose slightly over the past year. You probably heard that in Los Angeles County, this is the first year it actually went down by about 4%. But in our area in the South Bay, it went up slightly. So we had just a slight uptick of 3.5%, which really translates into an additional 145 people that were identified as homeless. So our total right now is a little over 4,200. So that's it as far as the numbers are concerned. Shari can speak to this a lot more as well, but homelessness takes a lot of different there's a lot of different faces to homelessness, so you just can't categorize it as one. And I know when the general public thinks of people who are homeless, they immediately have this image of maybe someone panhandling in a freeway off-ramp or maybe someone living in a tent and so forth. But homelessness really has a lot of different faces, though. Those are just the people that you see, and that's only just a small percentage of the folks who are really experiencing homelessness. So there are people who have substance abuse, you have mental illness, but a lot of people also have physical disabilities. There's a lot of veterans experiencing homelessness, people who have severe physical ailments, long-term ailments like HIV, AIDS, people who have experienced domestic violence, and so forth. So there is no one kind of stereotypical type picture of what people experiencing homelessness, what they look like. And especially now, kind of with the uptick that we've seen in the last couple of years, just because of rising rents and the lack of affordable housing, the lack in the rental market, it's very tight right now. So a lot of people that used to be housed are now, unfortunately, just falling into homelessness. So we're seeing that a lot in the last couple of years.
Wow. Wow. Where do you start, Sherry, with a problem like this in explaining it to people that aren't involved, that don't know much about it? Maybe they want to help. How can people out there wrap their minds around helping and getting involved?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways you can help. But the thing that I want to start with, I think education, as you just mentioned, is really important. And as Nancy had said, that, you know, what homelessness is and is not. Of course, I think we all have the visual reminders on a daily basis of all the encampments and individuals that we see on the street. But what we're starting to see more of, too, is seniors that are living on fixed incomes that can no longer afford their rent, or having their partner pass away and going from a two-income household to a one-income household. And we're seeing a lot more families with children even now that are living on the streets. And in my 17 years being in homeless services, that was more of a rarity if we ever saw it, and now it's more common. But there's a lot of ways to help. I think first and foremost is really there's a lot of great articles in LA Times, maybe even partnering with a homeless services organization, and can even go out and do outreach with us, or connecting folks that they come in contact with in their communities to services that are available throughout the South Bay. And there's other ways you can help, too. I mean, we do have a lot of success in getting folks housed, and people are basically moving into apartments with no furniture and kind of, you know, need a help up. Anything from welcome home kits, so it could be dishes, it could be towels, it could be just, you know, you think of the amenities that you have in your house, and that is one way, of course, that folks can help.
You know, it's interesting.
Okay.
Joe had mentioned earlier why, and here's one of the issues. We're such a, you know, for the most part, at least here in the South Bay, we're such a society that wants to help others that it's almost to a fault. And so, for instance, in Manhattan Beach, Joe was asking, well, why do we have a homeless issue in Manhattan Beach? Now, is our homeless issue, I mean, per capita, we're probably right there with the others. You know, we're only 3.6 square miles, but we have our 20 homeless, I think six documented, 20 homeless that are being documented. We have Mary comes here once on Tuesdays to work with our police department. We really need someone here 5 days a week. I mean, all the beach cities do. But, you know, sometimes a handout is not a hand up. And one of the things in the meetings that we've talked about, the homeless is, you know, we have a tendency to give them the cup of coffee, give them some food to eat, give them, you know, some money or get them, you know, when in reality what we need to do is, it seems to me anyway, we need to find out who these people are and what their real needs are. Maybe they need a suitcase. Maybe they need an airplane ticket to West Virginia. Maybe they need, you know, and certainly a lot of them need housing, but you also have mental health issues that housing doesn't solve the problem. It's more being able to keep them longer than 72 hours, being able to find the medication they should be on and getting them on and keeping them on that medication. So you know, after all the meetings I've been to, you guys, I really have definite thoughts about this issue. And one is I think if I had to take that $500 million from the state, I would want to spend it on street teams. I would want qualified personnel traveling with our police department, because no homeless person wants to talk to a police department, you know, with a uniform and a gun. But when Mary's out there with them, she has the database available to her. She can find out if they're in there. She can learn more about them. And she also has a way of pulling that information from them, because they'll talk to her and getting them in the database, so that then that's a centralized database. I think we're working on that. And others then can – we can sort of figure out how to help this individual. Am I off base on that?
No, I think you're right on the money with that. I think part of what you had just said, too, is, you know, are we giving a hand up or a hand, you know. And I think that there is good things that come out of that namely building a relationship and rapport and getting to understand why that person is living on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And that can actually lead to that person being willing to trust you enough to get them connected
right.
to homeless services. So, you know, I think we all want to be caring human beings. It hurts our soul to see people out there suffering in the way that they do. And I think there's got a lot of really good-natured people that are trying to do what they know how to do with the resources they have. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but we need to learn how to move that forward to actually getting people the help that they need.
Right.
Well,
I've never heard you, Mark, explain yourself more eloquently and more cogently in terms of stating what could be a solution going forward. Obviously, some people are going to be homeless and there are going to be very few things that can be done because they are determined to be homeless or they are mentally ill and just simply it's difficult to convince them to come in. But for those that can be helped, I think your solution, Mark, is the best one I've heard.
The other thing is there's legislatively some things, too. We seem to kind of, you know, we want to throw money at everything, but are we spending it wisely? First of all, I think there need to be more street
right.
teams. There need to be more professionals in all of these communities working alongside our police departments to learn more about these individuals. And but also legislatively, for instance, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy, but the term a homeless person with mental issues is not considered disabled, right?
No, they are, actually. That is one of the disabling conditions. And, in fact, the state of California is moving toward having some legislation that will actually, under certain circumstances, being able to take a more active role. Right now,
and that's what I'm talking about. I think we need to – that legislation is what I'm talking about, that we need to push
mm-hmm.
that through, and I think Janice Hahn is really working on it, need to push that through so that we can actually have some time to work with these individuals. Because right now, what is it, 72 hours or less, and they're back out?
Correct. And that's
right.
not enough
and,
time.
And, right. Not only is that enough time, but that also they have to have an immediate danger to themselves or to others. And with this legislation that is in Sacramento right now, there it kind of broadens that criteria when you can actually
right.
take somebody in. And it's really for their own benefit as well. But I did want to just jump in and just say I appreciate everyone mentioning and recognizing that we need more street outreach teams. Through our local initiative, the County Measure H funding, we actually are getting many, many more of those outreach teams, and there's more to come as well. But we've seen an increase of those already in the past 6 months, just as that Measure H money is starting to actually flow into our region. So, and Sherry can speak more to that, but again, you're right on target as far as what we need, and the county recognizes this as well, and so that is a huge emphasis, and a tremendous amount of the Measure H money is actually going right now. It's specifically focused for that street outreach component.
Now, is it Nancy or Sherry that needs to go soon? Which one?
Sherry.
Sherry, so I want to give you a chance, Sherry, a little more chance over the next 5 minutes to really give us a statement of purpose that you think that people should take away from this conversation. What should we as individuals do, and what should our local governments do you believe, Sherry?
Well, I think on both accounts is really knowing what resources are out there in the community. And how to get folks connected. We've actually, on our Harbor Interfaith website, have put together a brochure. So if you encounter a homeless family, a homeless individual, or a youth between the ages of 16 to 24, there are direct points of contact in various locations throughout the South Bay that you can call and connect somebody. But I just kind of wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Nancy just said is, we've really increased the street outreach that's out there. But in order for us to be successful and really start reducing and working towards ending homelessness, that has to be partnered with housing resources. And right now that is a challenge and a struggle. we've had a lot of success over the years. We've gotten thousands of people into permanent housing and in supportive housing, for people that have these disabling conditions, whether it be mental health, past or present substance abuse, but even looking at the short-term crisis housing, we have a very limited stock of that here in the South Bay, and that would really help us to bridge that gap towards getting folks towards permanent housing.
Well, there's going to be a huge NIMBY attitude with that.
The short-term crisis housing?
Yeah. Well, just not in my backyard housing. And
yeah.
I think there was some incentive, and we do have it with some apartment buildings, don't they, Sherry, carve out some apartments that are for disadvantaged families?
They're supposed to be 10% of the units that are supposed to be carved out, and for that. Now, whether that's adhered to across the board, I really couldn't speak to that. But what I will say is that we have such a shortage of affordable housing, and we would have to create literally 5,000 units a year in order to even start to see an impact in those that we help. We don't really have a control of the flow of people that are coming into homelessness because of the housing market right now. And it's incredibly scary right now to see where rents are going.
Well,
it's a state, county, and local issue that's at the forefront right now. We talk about it in city meetings here, Manhattan Beach. We're July 3rd at City Council. We're going to talk about Sepulveda development. We're going to probably raise the height restrictions to 40 feet from 30 feet so that we can put more mixed-use development along Sepulveda, which means housing. How much of that will be affordable? Affordable based on Manhattan Beach rates is the problem.
Here's the other issue is, I know that a lot of developers, there was just a project in Redondo Beach. They originally wanted to do 180 something units, and a percentage of that would be considered low income housing. That didn't pass. The people that lived around here didn't like it, and they pushed back. And now it's, I think, 110 units and low income housing. But low income housing is not homelessness housing. That's for people that are not homeless. So we're having an issue. I mean, look at even people that might have $1 million sitting in the bank can't afford to live in the beach cities now. Buy a home. The prices for homes are insane. So and now we're just talking about apartment living. It's next to impossible to get an apartment that. Even if you're working and you have a two-income family and you have cars and stuff, it's hard enough to find apartments for those. The homeless housing is a completely different issue. And, it's time for people to start thinking outside the box like that, And one of the things I got to believe, there's so many great foundations and stuff out there. It may not be in in central beach cities. It may be a little further inland, but having some of these foundations maybe donate a piece of land and build some apartment buildings that will be dedicated to the organizations that are helping to get the homeless into a unit.
Right. Yeah, but you know what?
That's pie in the sky.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Here's a thought, though. First of all, going back to your some of that 10% is for disadvantaged families. Well, the thing is, what's happening now in our rental and housing market is those disadvantaged families are now on the street, so they are the homeless. I mean, I've read about teachers living in their cars because they can't afford. Now, why they don't move to Missouri or someplace else, I don't know, but they are, so what was a disadvantaged family living in a low-income housing might be a disadvantaged family now living
homeless, yes.
On the street,
Yeah.
And then follow this line of thinking, too. The nice thing about having 10%, if somehow legislatively we could have 10% of our homes dedicated to 10% of our units dedicated to disadvantaged families is because then the other 90% become mentors. If you have, and I'm just now thinking off the top of my head, if I have a building that I built on a vacant lot that was available, donated to me, and now I have a building. It's all disadvantaged families. Where are the mentors? Where are the aspirations? Where are the people to talk to and say, I would love to have your lifestyle? How did you get there? What do I need to do? You know, what kind of a track do I need to be on? In other words, if you're in a place where there are people who are living and working and surviving, then at least you have some role models around you.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. You know, and I think the other thing, again, is even looking at our senior population, I can tell you that on a weekly basis, I'm getting a lot more seniors who are now retired and on fixed incomes. And
yeah.
83 years old, 86 years old, saying, I'm getting ready to lose my housing, and what am I going to do? And may not even have a car to sleep in. It's a scary mm-hmm. thought.
Here's the other thing, too,
that
Sherry,
is
that
scary.
I believe the low-hanging fruit, this is an easy action item, and that is, I sort of have a testimonial to that, is, and I said this at the meeting here in Manhattan Beach when it was brought up, that we need to provide educational materials, some sort of, to all of our local businesses, and provide, and even to our homeowners, we can put them in utility bills and things like that, but we need to provide, just like you have on the wall in your business in the back, the OSHA rules or the, you know, whatever rules that you're mandated by the state to put up. There should be homeless, what to do with your homeless population, who to call during, if it's a weekend, who do I call? If it's during the day, who do I call? If it's night, who do I call? And have those numbers available and displayed so all employees and coach these guys to have their employees call these numbers so that these teams, these street teams, outreach teams, can come out and talk to them. And I've tried to do that. I mean, I know you guys have cards and things that you hand out, but I think it almost needs to be a real concerted effort with each city to supply all businesses with, I mean, like a laminated contact sheet for different days of the week and who to call. And my testimonial is, when I have sent that out to our businesses on an email blast to our chamber members, typically my open rate for email blasts are in the 20-22%, which is pretty good. That's, you know, that's a pretty good open rate if you talk to marketers. Whenever I send something out about homeless, I'm in the 30-plus open rate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
wild.
And I just
wanted to announce, too, that, you know, to that point of, you know, who do we contact, who do we call, Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority is in the process of finalizing the development of what they call LA Hop. And LA Hop is their homeless outreach portal. And that portal is going to be available to law enforcement, community stakeholders, business owners to actually plug in, hey, I've got a gentleman that's homeless over here in front of my business, giving a physical address and giving a description of that individual that you want to have somebody come out and connect with. So that should be online, I would say, within the next two weeks to maybe a month. So that is something, too. So once we get that information, we will pass it along.
Yes, please do, because I will get that out to all of our businesses. That'll be great.
Sherry? Sherry,
yes.
Let me ask you something. I know Mark was saying that they have one person that goes out one day a week with their police department. What about the other cities in the South Bay? Like, how many teams does like El Segundo have? How many teams does Torrance have? What's kind of an average for these teams that go out and help with the situation?
We've got quite a few. Like Nancy said, you know, one of the things that's really expanded is outreach. So for the South Bay, we now have a multidisciplinary team. So we've got two teams of three people each, and that includes a recovery specialist, a social worker, and even a nurse that comes out, and they can come out and provide, you know, a variety of different services that are very specific to that individual. In addition to that, we have our homeless engagement team that is through LASA. Through the coordinated entry system, we have another six individuals that are going throughout the 27 cities. We have the South Bay City COG that has their outreach team. So we've got quite a bit of outreach, and that doesn't even include, too, there are veteran outreach teams that are out there. Department of Mental Health has their SB 82, which specifically focuses on those that aren't getting to the clinics and assisting them to get connected. So we've got a variety of outreach. But again, it's, you know, we have to have the resources to outreach alone, and identifying and having these conversations and getting people connected is one thing. But we need to have a resource if we're going to have, you know, these meaningful conversations of, are you interested in getting off the streets and into housing? We have to have the housing to put them in. A lot of days we get creative. You know, we have very limited shelters. We have 10 male beds for single adults up in the Inglewood area. We just have another 20 beds for women that just came online down in Long Beach. And then for families, we have 20 units here at Harbor Interfaith that can accommodate up to 60 people at any given time, and then 14 more units down in Long Beach that can accommodate up to 44 household members total. So it's not enough.
That's interesting.
But, you know,
it's
the only outreach that
I'm familiar with is Mary, who's here on Tuesdays with our police department. I know that Harbor Faith has worked with a couple of churches here, but I'm not aware. I guess aren't you the outreach for COG, Harbor Faith?
No.
They
have their own outreach people, but what did take place this year is we have a regional outreach coordinator, so that person is responsible for being connected to all these teams, and as calls come in, is dispatching somebody to those locations.
So I just
wanted to
clarify. Maybe I can do this after the break.
Yeah, we got to do a quick break, and I believe Sherry has to take off to a meeting. So,
Sherry,
yeah, thank you guys so much for your time.
Harbor,
thank you, Sherry.
Harbor Interfaith, harborinterfaith.org, H-A-R-B-O-R, interfaith.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sherry Weaver.
Thank you. Have a great Friday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we will take a short break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and rarely do we talk about a topic more important than homelessness in the South Bay. It's real. It involves hundreds and hundreds of individuals, families, and the idea of someone being in their 80s, being in an apartment and looking to the next month or two or three and not having enough money to stay in that place is just terrifying. There has to be a permanent solution, and also there have to be these strike teams and that go into areas and give people services. It's a big deal. It's a big issue. We're back. Nancy, where do we go next? What's the next point that you would like to get across to people?
Well, before I get there, I just wanted to just kind of clarify a little bit more about these outreach teams, and I appreciate you knowing so much already about Mary and the great work that she does. I just want to explain that she actually is part of she's an employee of the Department of Mental Health, and she's part of what we call the MET team, the Mental Health Evaluation Team, and they are specifically tasked to and assigned to police departments throughout the South Bay. So you asked about particular coverage. So Mary, I know, works the beach cities, so that's why she does Manhattan up through, I believe, up through Redondo. So she is one day a week, I believe, in Manhattan, one day in Hermosa, and like maybe a couple of days in Redondo.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm so just to let you know, Torrance also has a MET officer, and Gardena and Hawthorne also share a MET officer, so they're kind of half-time in those two cities. And Inglewood as well has one. So many of our law enforcement agencies throughout the South Bay do have people like a Mary who are ride-alongs. But above and beyond, and that's probably who you see a lot more, just because they are really super focused on that particular area, and they have a lot more visibility maybe with the community because they are riding along and working side by side with your law enforcement. But above and beyond that, Sherry rattled off just a lot of other different teams that are working across the South Bay. And in general, all of the outreach teams kind of work both proactively and reactively. And if you don't mind, I'll just take a minute to explain that. So as far as the proactive, all of the teams have kind of certain areas that they just kind of drive around and canvas, a lot of encampment areas, but also if they know that there are certain individuals who are chronically homeless, who have been on the streets for over a year, sometimes several years, they will kind of make a certain run, and like maybe the first thing in the morning, depending on which team it is, they'll have kind of a certain circuit that they kind of drive through and just check in on people. And then Sherry also mentioned that they have we're going to have this outreach portal soon, but before that, just in response to calls, we do have all of these teams also kind of are more reactive in the sense when they do receive a call from either the general public, from businesses, from law enforcement, from the city officials, and just anybody, then they are able to go out and kind of investigate those particular cases as well. And one of the great things about this outreach coordinator position that's based out of Harbor Interfaith Services is that person not only coordinates all of these teams, but you want to make sure that the same team goes out to the same location, talks to the same person time and time again. And, you know, she already mentioned we probably have at least close to a dozen different outreach teams that we can talk about. And we've done those where there's anywhere from like, you know, 2 to 4 people each. So we have many people out there working in the South Bay. And what we don't want to have happen is have, you know, 1 week one person goes and another week somebody else goes and the third week yet another person goes, because that's, we just don't build those relationships that Sherry mentioned are just critical to gaining the trust of those who are living on the street, so they will accept services from us. So that's the way kind of outreach works, to kind of at a high level.
Nancy, so is there one place, is there one number people can call if you're a business and there's a homeless person camping in your doorway? Is there one number you can call, and then on your end it's coordinated who gets out there?
Sure. Well, there will be very soon, and that's what Sherry mentioned, this outreach portal. They've done a soft launch of that, and that's actually going to be countywide very soon, like Sherry mentioned, in about 2 to 4 weeks or so. And it's this HOP system, outreach portal. And it's an online system, and people are just asked to put their own information and then any descriptive information of the person that you see experiencing homelessness, as well as location. And then for those folks who may not be quite as computer savvy or may not have access directly to, you know, to some kind of electronic device, people will also be able to call 211 and then report the same information. And then that in turn will get plugged into this primary HOP portal that we're calling it. One of the things I didn't want to mention, 211? It's
211.
Yes, 211.
What's new about 211? What is new about that? Tell me about that.
Are you familiar with what 211 is?
No, I'm not.
There's a lot of different 3-digit codes that are throughout the county. Of course, everyone's familiar with 911, an emergency. But 211 is one that has a lot of general information and just about services, and particularly those who are need some kind of like homeless services, they can call 211, and then that the operators there are trained to ask a certain amount of questions, and then based on the responses, like, you know, where you're located, what's your situation, are you a family member, so forth, then they can give direct referrals to the appropriate agency that's closest to where that individual is located. And in fact, that's how on the family side, we encourage people to call 211 as well, because they're really plugged in and they're kind of the backbone right now, the reporting backbone for the coordinated entry system that Sherry heads up, but for the family side. So I know it's all kind of a lot of information, so we can send you some additional information if you're able to post this. But Sherry did mention that we do have a kind of a one-pager trifold brochure that right now lists contact numbers for the community to call. And one of the things that we've done through our coordinated entry system, which, by the way, that's a countywide operational system, is the South Bay is so large that we've divided it into 4 kind of sub-regional hubs. So the one for where you're located in the beach cities is naturally called, you know, the beach cities hub. And so we have, I mentioned that we have four across the South Bay. Each one is kind of headed up by a different service provider who kind of works that particular area. And in many cases, that person, that agency has really been in that community and has deep roots within the local community. So Harbor Interfaith, for example, is the harbor hub. In the northern hub, which is more like the Inglewood, Lenox, Lawndale, Gardena, Hawthorne area, the hub lead is an agency called St. Margaret's Center up in Lenox, and they've been well established there for about 25 years. So in the beach cities, our primary contact is PATH, and that stands for People Assisting the Homeless. So we can provide contact information on who you would call for that for services there.
I have a question. It's again maybe pie in the sky, but Nancy, in all of your years of experience, is there a particular neighborhood or city or any kind of municipality that has successfully dealt with the homeless situation in their neck of the woods and that is being used as a model for how to make this work?
City of Long Beach is a great model. So, and for a lot of different reasons, and it really starts at the city level. They have invested a lot of their own financial money into. They run a center called the Multi-Service Center, and which is a facility where it's kind of like a one-stop shop. And the rest of LA County is kind of catching up to what Long Beach has been doing for many, many, many years. But Long Beach actually is one of the first areas that has successfully seen a drop in homelessness over the past two or three counts. So I would really lift them up. So they have, again, for me, it really starts at the, you know, kind of the recognition from your elected officials, your city council and so forth. And then as far as recognizing there's a problem and then, you know, what do we do about it? And, you know, how do we invest not just our own funding and get additional public funding from the state, federal government as well, but they've actually been very successful in kind of combating some of this NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard that was mentioned previously. And, you know, those are very delicate conversations, and I don't mean to imply that, oh, it's easy, you know, just city council just has to tell the community, hey, you know, we have to build affordable housing here, we have to build supportive housing here. That isn't what it's all about. So, of course, the city council has to be very, they have to be concerned and to what the constituents want as well. So it is kind of a delicate balance, but I think Long Beach does it really well.
That's good to know. That's good to know that somebody is making it work. But yeah, the NIMBYism, honest to God, you could throw as much money at this as you want, but there are just going to be communities that just don't want it, and that's going to be the hardest part of it.
I think one of the ways that we really like to combat NIMBYism is, you know, Sherry mentioned before, just education. One of the things that our coalition does, and we're really in partnership with United Way and some of the other larger initiatives that are going on throughout the county, is just a education campaign. I think people don't understand what supportive housing looks like. I think that people think of it as the old projects and have a kind of in quotes what they saw on TV from, you know, last century, you know, the 90s and, you know, 80s and 90s and so forth. But supportive housing looks very, very different.
Last century.
Just having some bus trips on what it looks like. But even some, you know, quite frankly, in the beach communities, because land is scarce and then the cost of land is prohibitively high. So even if we can't have supportive housing, then at least have more affordable housing. And that's for all of those people that are right
scary,
on the fringe.
Nancy.
Because, yeah, you know, but,
you said last century. I remember the last century. Oh my God!
You know, I have to confess, when you're at the top of the hour and you're talking about all of these, different places that you're encouraging some of your community members to go to. I'm kind of in your age bracket, let's put it that way. So
you guys are kids. You guys are kids. You know what,
anyway,
I've noticed?
Last century.
You know what I've noticed when you have to what I've begun to notice is when you have to put the year of your birth on something and it pops up on the computer and you have to scroll to the year. Used to be I just scroll right to
scrolling,
and then I finally get to. Pretty soon it's going to get to the point where it's just going to get to the end and go, yeah, whatever. So it's not even going to be there. You know.
Yeah. But anyway,
get to the end of the list, I think. No.
Yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to mention, just real quickly, what we have been talking, of course, about people who are already homeless. One of the things that I did want to mention was through Measure H funding, there's a lot more of money available to help those who are imminently in danger of eviction or becoming homeless. So homeless prevention is really key. One of the things that we'll talk about, and we can – Well, let me I'll tell you that in a minute. Let me just – one of the things that we need to do is one of the things that gets lost in all these homeless count numbers, of course, we talk about how many people are literally on the streets or in shelter or living out of a vehicle. But one thing – a number that rarely gets lifted up are how many people we've actually housed over the year. And we've countywide, we've housed – tens of thousands of people. And here in the South Bay, I need to get the statistics for Sherry for this particular last fiscal year, but I know for 2017, they housed over 700 people. It's actually more than that, probably over 1,000 people just in the South Bay who are now stably housed and permanently housed. And sometimes those numbers get lost. And one of the reasons is because even though we are successfully able to put people into housing despite the high rental market and all the other challenges we have, more people are falling into homelessness than we can help. So turning off that spigot is really what we need to focus on countywide. And one of the ways that they're doing that is through some of these prevention funds. So the way it works is that right now there actually has been for a couple of years prevention funds for families. So any family that's particularly those who are renting and they get like some kind of eviction notice and they get a 3-day notice, or sometimes they don't have money to pay for the next rent or maybe some utility costs, there is money available to kind of tide them over for a short time so they can kind of get back on their feet financially. So those programs have been in place, but not to a large extent. So again, Measure H money is putting a lot more funding into those prevention measures. And for the first time, they're offering those same preventative measures for individuals who are right on the verge of experiencing homelessness. So again, the emphasis has really been on families, just because I think nobody really wants to see children, particularly living on the streets or in cars. So that's where historically the prevention funding has been there. But again, it's widening to include everybody. And another population that we also haven't talked about yet is the youth homelessness population, which unfortunately is increasing. And in our world, youth means 18 to 24-year-olds, so young adults. They're falling into homelessness much faster than other age groups. So we're kind of paying more attention to what their needs are as well.
Nancy, you mentioned in the beginning of the show that some numbers had come down, some of the homeless numbers had come down. Do you think that's because of the stronger economy?
It might be, but that's kind of a double-edged sword, because sometimes with the stronger economy, I think that's why some people are able to there's pockets around the county where you've had more gentrification. So unfortunately, those are areas where the rent has really gone up a lot. So I really think a lot of it is really more due to all of the prevention measures and to all the initiatives that have been going on. You know, I mentioned Measure H. Of course, that's the $355 million initiative for the next 10 years, but there's a lot of other major programs as well that are also pouring millions of dollars into Los Angeles County. You know, Sherry mentioned some of the programs for veterans that's funded separately. There's a program called Whole Person Care, which is a $1.2 billion initiative over 5 years, and we're in year two of that, and I could kind of go on. So I really think that all of these programs put together are really, we're finally starting to kind of turn the corner and see some downturns in some of the numbers countywide.
Yeah, I was thinking just in terms of people being able to get jobs, like those people that were on sitting on the edge, you know, they couldn't afford to pay their rent. And then maybe, you know, they're, because now everybody is looking to hire these days, you know, according to the numbers. We have more jobs than we have people to fill them. So I was just thinking those people that were not necessarily the homeless that have been out there for a year or more, but the people that were scraping by, you know, to make ends meet. And then and now maybe they're able to get a second job or something like that.
Right. So well, that might be the case, but I do want to kind of temper that just with a statistic. Just last week, there's a national organization that published what the on average for each county within the across the entire country, how much the average rent is versus how much people would have to pay, how much of their income they would need to pay in order to afford kind of a standard one bedroom and two bedroom apartment in each county if they earned minimum wage. And what that report showed that in Los Angeles County, you would have to have close to three people working minimum wage to be able to afford rent here in Los Angeles. So, you know, you have to kind of look at both sides of it. So that's why I'm a little hesitant to say yes, even though there might be more job opportunities. Unfortunately, the pay has not really kept up with that. And that actually kind of bears out something, too. There's a statistic that the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority has published, and I'll just read it off to you if you don't mind. They're saying since the year 2000, the median rent in Los Angeles County has increased 32%, while the median renter household income has decreased by 3%. So I think that's really telling as well. Just again, so in other words, the people's salary increases are not keeping pace with the rising rents.
Well, the other interesting thing as a result of all that, a lot of the jobs that we knew as teenagers are now adult jobs. I used to deliver the newspaper on your bike. Now it's done by adults in cars. I mean, those are their jobs. Your fast food industry is all employed by adults now and not kids. Like when we were growing up, that was the part-time or job you had. And so it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I know, I think one other thought that that I wanted to just leave some of your listeners with is you mentioned before, what are some things that people can do just to help out people who are experiencing homelessness? And Sherry and I always really emphasize education, just understand why people are becoming homeless. And it isn't because of choice and so forth, and, you know, there's several reasons. But one other thing, too, that I'd really like to emphasize, that if people can just be patient with the homeless services, and what happens is that it just takes a fairly long time to get people housed. And primarily, you know, some of it, quite frankly, is kind of the bureaucracy. There's a lot of forms. People who are experiencing homelessness typically don't have a lot of ID. And when they do get ID, it gets stolen frequently. So we have to kind of, you know, start that process over. That plus just how long it takes to find an affordable place to live, it can take several months. So even though we're working with people, just recognize we can't move people in overnight, unfortunately. It does take time. But, we're able to house people one person at a time, and we get the job done. Organizations like Harbor Interfaith and PATH and Mental Health America, you know, I can just rattle off a lot of the service providers that we have in the South Bay. They're all wonderful organizations, but it does take time.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, how do you feel about – we had an issue probably a year, maybe 2 years ago, where we had – the homeless living under the bridge across the Sepulveda,
yes,
where the chip path
mm-hmm.
ends. And, mm-hmm. and of course, it got into Nextdoor Neighbor, which is the local version of Facebook. And people were complaining about the homeless people living under the bridge. And I weighed in and said, well, where would you like them to go?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather them go to your backyard, or would you rather them go on the street or over on the chip path or somebody? So
mm-hmm.
how do you feel about that? I felt, you know what, for the interim, why not let them just stay right there? But the city, because of the next-door neighbor comments and all that, went in and moved them out. Now, I don't know where they went after that, but they moved them out from that bridge. They ran them out. And I felt like, man, if there was a safe place for them, it was right there.
I appreciate your empathy. And again, I try and look at all points of view. I think if it's only a we definitely need to have solutions where people can safely spend the night. And whether that's in a vehicle or whether that's in a tent or just out on the, you know, cold elements with a blanket over you or a piece of cardboard or something, we do need to find safe places. But the real solution is again, we need many more shelter beds so that people don't have to be in that situation in the
right.
first place. And
I'm talking about tonight. What do the guys do
mm-hmm.
who are, you know, they got ran out today. Say they got ran mm-hmm. out of from underneath. I mean, I'm just thinking that sometimes we have to be careful
mm-hmm.
what the cause of that reaction could
mm-hmm.
be.
Hey, Jack.
You know?
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate again your empathy, and we share a lot of the same viewpoints as far as what can be done just immediately to help that particular person. You know, one of the other things I want to mention too is people sometimes they ask, you know, why are there so many people in the South Bay that are homeless? It's like, you know, why are they here? Why aren't they like maybe other parts of the county? Or, you know, why don't they move to another state where maybe they, you know, if people do have jobs and they just can't afford to live here? You know, the real simple answer, but the one that is really the we find time and time again, these people call Los Angeles home. And again, another statistic that Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority has put forward is that over 80% of the people who are homeless have lived in Los Angeles County for over 5 years. And it's like 65% have been here over 20 years. And I've actually gone out with some of the outreach teams here in the South Bay. And so I have a chance to kind of chat with some of the folks who are experiencing homelessness. And they grew up here in the South Bay. This is their home. And for whatever reason, they just can't afford to live in a place. But, you know, they went to school at these places.
Okay, just to play devil's
mm-hmm.
advocate, though, I mean, my
mm-hmm.
kids
sure.
probably can't afford to move back to Manhattan Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they may have to go somewhere else or maybe even out of state, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just kind of the law of the jungle, sort of, unfortunately.
Sure.
You know,
I understand, but when you're homeless though, and you know, from a practical point of view, they wouldn't have fun. They wouldn't really have the money. We do provide reunification funding, so especially this comes into play a lot with young adults. I mentioned the 18 to 24 year olds that may have been separated from their family, and some people have come here from outside of Los Angeles. So we definitely do provide transportation back to wherever our home is, but we have to verify that they have a safe and stable place when they return there. We're just not going to give people a plane ticket or a bus ticket and say, hey, good luck to you. You know, here's your ticket.
Well, I know, but
we absolutely have to verify.
Would it be easier to take some of the measure monies and work with other states and maybe finding places that maybe they're set up? And I mean, a person going to another state, even though they're maybe, you know, of course, you know, moving away from where they grew up, but maybe they can start a new life and feel productive. You know, I'm just wondering if we're, you know, to try to continue to put people in this hugely. I mean, those of us that have jobs can bear, you know, we're a mortgage payment away from you know, being on the street or moving, you know, and so, you know, imagine if you're homeless. I mean, if you could somehow train them and coach them and mentor them, maybe they would say, you know what, I think I do need to try someplace else where the cost of living is less. I have more of an opportunity to find employment and housing that I can afford.
I understand what you're saying, but I really feel like it is kind of our responsibility as a society to take care of our own homeless. And we certainly have the financial resources now. We just need a little bit more the community and the political willpower to
right.
make all these things happen. And
well,
we're getting there. I really see a lot
and
of positive.
And it would have to be something they would want to do. You know, it'd have to be something
mm-hmm.
they want to do. I'm not
Absolutely.
Saying shovel them off to some other location. But.
Well,
right.
exactly, and that's the point too. We don't want to just make our challenges somebody else's challenges because
right,
that doesn't
right.
help.
Right. No, it'd be something
and,
that.
Even,
Right.
You would mentor them, in,
Mark,
and they might themselves come up with that idea.
Mark,
mm-hmm.
Mark,
I
think of that. I think of doing that every time I watch HGTV, and I think I can get a house and 20 acres
oh.
for $75,000. Yeah, I think of that
right.
pretty much any time I watch that channel.
All the time.
So,
all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Joe, we gotta wrap this up.
Yes, we do. Nancy
we do.
Wilcox, for everything that you do, for all of us, those that are living and working in the South Bay, this is such a huge issue. We are so thankful for you and what you do. Thank you for joining us today to explain just some of it.
Okay, it was my pleasure, I appreciate you asking us to participate.
Now, give us
Anytime.
Some contact information, Nancy. Give us some phone numbers, some websites where people can get in touch with you and in touch with resources.
So probably the best thing to do is our coalition does have a website, and it's just our initial. So it's sbzandbakerceh.org. And we have a lot of information there about the homeless count, about a lot of statistics, but we have there's a place there, too, if they want to be on our email list. That's probably the best thing to do, so you can start to get some of our weekly information that we disseminate. And I invite anyone to our monthly meetings. They're posted. We rotate them throughout the South Bay. Our next meeting is next Wednesday, as I think I heard mentioned. It's going to be at 9:30 a.m. to 11:30. And
mm-hmm.
next month is going to be just next door. It's going to be the El Segundo United Methodist Church. So we welcome community members, all stakeholders. We'd love to see folks come out.
Well, Nancy,
South
please
Bay
keep the
Coalition
chamber informed, especially
homeless.
When you get the central site set up. Please keep it, because I've been sending that information as I get it out to our local businesses. And they're receptive. And as you can tell from the open rate, they're interested.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No,
South
we
Bay.
Definitely either Sherry or I will definitely send that to you when it's
okay.
When it's live.
Good.
South Bay Coalition
okay.
to End Homeless, SBCEH.org. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you very much, Mark, for joining us as always, and of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Always a
That's
pleasure.
That's our show,
Joe.
Ladies
Shoot.
And gentlemen. That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Have a
All
great
right.
weekend.
Happy
Bye.
Friday, everyone.